Get ready for Ready Radio with Doug and Amy. It's emergency preparedness for everyone. Brought to you by TruPrep. For all your prepping needs, visit TruPrep online at truprep.com or visit a TruPrep store in Roswell or Marietta. Listen in as Doug and Amy provide helpful tips on how to get ready for anything that comes your way. And now, your hosts, Doug and Amy.
Welcome, everybody. You're listening to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy. This week, we're going to have a very special episode talking about making cheese. And this is a fantastic topic, not only for preppers, but also for homesteaders. Because if you're going to have large quantities of milk, say that you decide to purchase a cow, even a small cow is going to make more milk than you could ever drink as a family. So you're going to have to either find a way to refrigerate and store it, which is a good option, be able to sell it at some point, or you're going to have to come up with milk byproducts that are designed to store and preserve the milk. And the two main ones that come to mind are butter and cheese. And so if we can learn how to make cheese, not only from cow's milk, but also from goats, then we have a way of preserving the milk for long-term storage in a healthy way that is beneficial for our families.
Yeah, Doug, I'm excited about the show today, too, because, you know, as our listeners, I'm sure they know us by now. You know, our main focus is emergency preparedness, and a lot of people really are kind of getting more into, like you said earlier, the homesteading part of emergency preparedness, and that's what we're going to focus on today. And Doug, one of the things I truly believe is that if there's a, you know, some of the emergency or the disaster, I guess, scenarios that we talk about are scenarios where we don't have grocery stores. We don't have a place to run out to get, you know, milk, bread, and eggs and things like that. And cheese would be a luxury at that point. But so, yeah, I'm excited about today. One of the things, too, I'm thinking is this is something you need to learn and practice and do ahead of time because, I don't know, in certain situations, in certain scenarios, like, I don't know if you're going to be able to get a cow or maybe a goat and you know, learn how to milk it and make cheese. I'm clueless.
It is something that you should be practicing now. And the beauty of cheese making in particular is that it's not that hard. I mean, you can learn to do this at home, and it's something that you can do with the kids on a weekend and have a project for the family to do together that is not only wholesome but educational. So you can get the kids involved in making something. And I don't think that there's a kid alive that doesn't love mozzarella cheese. I mean, if they eat nothing else, they will eat mozzarella cheese on garlic bread and be happy little clams. So why not make mozzarella cheese with them in your own home? And our guest today is actually going to talk to us about how to make cheese, the overall process, but also the particulars of making mozzarella, which I think is very exciting.
Oh, that's awesome. You know, I've never made cheese. You know, I don't think I've even seen like a documentary on it, but I've made butter.
how did your butter making go?
You know, I was a kid. I don't remember. All I remember is having something in a jar and I shook it for a really long time.
Okay.
And we had butter.
Well, I remember at my grandmother's house, a glass vessel that had this weird paddle contraption on top, and you would turn it like a bicycle. And you would turn the bicycle pedal to get the paddles to go at high speed, and that would churn the butter for you. But she also had the old-fashioned kind, the one that was a crock pot with a long stick on it that you'd go up and down and up and down with to make the butter.
I mean, you don't need a gym membership with that, do you?
Well, that's another thing about, you know, homesteading and living without power is that there's an awful lot of work that goes into making food and making things happen. And that's one of the problems that we have such a sedentary lifestyle now that people aren't using the calories that they're putting in. You know, people blame bacon and they blame, you know, eggs and all of the heavy foods as why, you know, people are having heart attacks. And they ate way more than that back 100 years ago. You'd have biscuit and gravy and eggs and cheese and sausage and bacon and all of this and fried chicken, leftover fried chicken as a huge breakfast meal.
Yummy,
and then
yummy.
You would go out and you would, you know, do your daily tasks, like we go to work and do our daily tasks. But instead of sitting at a cubicle, you were plowing and milking and you know, doing all sorts of animal husbandry. And at the end of the day, you'd burned up 2,400 calories.
Yeah.
And so taking in 2,200 calories is a losing game. But here now, we're only burning, you know, maybe 800 or 900 calories in actual labor. And on top of that, we're taking in 2,200 calories. And everybody is getting heavier, and they're having heart attacks, and they're having strokes. There's diabetes and all of these you know, medical conditions related to obesity, all because people don't work like they used to work, but they eat like they used to eat.
Yes. I agree with you partially. I well, I would say mostly. I mean, I think there's a little bit more kind of to, you know, sort of the problems out there, a lot of, you know, sugars and processed foods, but this isn't what the show is about today. But partially,
well,
yes.
No. Today's show is a lot about processed food because there's processed cheese too. And there's a big question on what kind of cheese do you really want to be eating? Do you want to be eating Velveeta and American cheese and the processed cheeses? Or do you want to have more of what I might call an heirloom kind of cheese?
Exactly. Yeah, I don't think Velveeta should even have the name cheese, to be honest with you. I don't even know what that stuff is. I mean, it's like this. I believe, from my understanding, cheese is not naturally yellow in the first place. That primarily cheese, any type of cheese that you buy, has like different colorings, food colorings and stuff added to them, or, you know, be it from you know, red number 40 or yellow number whatever, or I think even more naturally, beet juice, I think, will
beet
kind
juice,
of yeah,
yeah,
that'll color different different things. But yeah, I mean, it's supposed to come out white from
You're using milk, and milk is white to begin with, so mm-hmm. the fats and solids that you're condensing down. That's something to remember, that a 1 ounce slice of cheese is equal to an 8 ounce glass of milk, because it's condensed down. It's just like when we dehydrate our fruits and vegetables, you end up with a smaller package. And, you know, remember last week we were talking about people eating, a bushel basket
yes.
worth of apricots.
Because I had some apricots on the way here, as a matter of fact.
Awesome.
I will clear the room if I need to, but I should, I should be fine.
But, you know, people eat too much because it's small and it's dehydrated and it's compact. Well, cheese is kind of like dehydrated milk. You've taken out the water and left all the fats and solids, and that's what makes a cheese.
Hmm. Cool.
As you know, we look at things that we can do with cheese. It's not only just good for cooking and eating, but the really amazing thing is the ability, once you remove the water, to be able to store the milk long term, because milk is only going to last you probably about a day if you're not able to refrigerate it. And then past that, if you have good refrigeration, you're still only looking at about maybe a 2 week period from when we've got the milk to when it has to be used or it's going to go sour. And there are uses for sour milk. I mean, mm-hmm. you don't have to throw it away. There's lots of things you can do with sour milk besides drinking it and getting sick.
You know, have you ever milked a cow?
No.
You haven't? See,
no.
I haven't either. And I don't know the difference between, you know, like homogenized milk. I don't know what that means.
I do.
Do
actually,
you? I mean, I'm kind of familiar with it, but I just don't know. How do you do that?
Well, it's a process of mixing the milk so that the fat molecules don't separate out again.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you have non-homogenized milk, the cream rises to the top.
Mm-hmm. Right, so it separates.
Yeah, it separates out.
So what do you do to make sure that it doesn't separate? Is it like a heat process?
No, that's pasteurization.
Oh, okay.
It's just a matter of mixing it to a point where
I have so much to learn.
It's the fat molecules are bonded throughout the liquid in an organized manner. So instead of them separating out every time, they'll stay suspended in the liquid. But if you have non-homogenized milk, then your cream rises to the top and you can scoop off the cream and use it like whipping cream or use it for making heavy cream
or
sour cream.
That's stuff. Or the butter, right?
Yes.
Is that what you use, that stuff, and then you shake it up and it makes butter?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And that's,
see?
Making the butter is kind of like the opposite of homogenizing.
Uh-huh.
It's taking and separating it out to the point where all of the liquid is out and only the fat remains.
Okay. I have a lot to learn. So can you do the same thing with different types of milks, I'm wondering, like from goats and,
yes,
and things
you can,
like that too?
I mean, you can make butter or cheese from just about any kind of milk, although I would not suggest, you know, some of the smaller creatures, it might be diminishing returns. You could
like
have
bunny rabbit milk.
I was going to say, if you had, you know, like 50,000 rats lined up,
yeah,
might
that'd
be
kind of disgusting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Can you milk a rat? That's kind of gross.
They did on The Simpsons.
Oh,
there was an episode. No, there was an episode of The Simpsons where the mafia was milking rats.
That's
for the
milk. That's a cartoon, Doug.
Oh, okay. I remember that now. They did seem a little yellow, much like your fake cheese.
Yes. Yeah, maybe that's where Velveeta comes from.
From the Simpsons.
I think so. Maybe. Well, Eureka. We finally figured it out.
See what you will learn, folks, by listening to this show. I mean, it is absolutely
stunning. We have to get this figured out before, you know, this big emergency, you know, disaster happens, be it the, you know, total grid shutdown or...
No matter what you end up doing, these are skills that will come in handy. And it's a good thing just to know how things work in your life. But beyond that, being able to do it for yourself, being able to bring the family in and make an activity out of it, to teach the kids something that they'll remember for the rest of their lives, and for them to just know that, you know, like in my own experience, chicken nuggets actually come from chickens.
That's right. Yeah, your daughter had a eureka moment with that, didn't she?
It was more like a tearful moment, but yeah. And she's back to eating chicken now, I'm glad to say. Yeah.
Because you have this absolutely precious picture of her holding a chicken like a baby. I've never seen anything like it in my entire life.
Yeah, I know.
This chicken is like upside down in her arms, just kind of laying there like...
And looking at her.
Just, adoringly.
Yeah. I mean, there was no love lost. There was no scratching, biting, pecking, nothing. Crazy. It was just laying there on his back, stretched out, legs straight out, wondering, what are we doing?
Gee whiz. Yeah, your daughter, how old is she? Three?
She's three.
She's three, yeah. So and a little three-year-old has this chicken holding it like a baby.
Yep, just like a doll.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can imagine you telling her, hey, honey, that's where chicken nuggets come from. No!
Yeah, we definitely had a moment where she was saying, no, I don't like chicken. I was like, well, all you eat is chicken. She says, I don't eat chickens. I keep care of chickens.
I take care of chickens. Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Well, folks, we are coming up on a commercial break. When we get back, we're going to introduce our special guest, who is an expert cheesemaker, to talk about how to make cheese at home and the process of making cheese. So stick around, and we'll be right back. You're listening to News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.
And now, back to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy.
Welcome back, everybody. We're talking cheese today, and we have a special guest in studio who is an expert cheesemaker, a homesteader, somebody who really believes in the idea of prepping and taking care of yourself, that prior proper planning will keep you alive in a desperate situation.
Say that three times fast.
So we're very glad to have Jessica Kales here with us in studio to talk a little bit about cheese making and what makes a good cheese. So Jessica, let me start off with asking you, what do you think of the Mideast crisis these days?
Oh, really?
Folks,
so funny.
We had a brief discussion that I would start off with a softball. So there we go. There's my softball question. So, seriously, though, how hard is it to make cheese at home?
It's not hard at all. It's actually fairly simple. It's about a 30-minute process. And you can have your own homemade fresh mozzarella, preservative-free.
What sort of ingredients do we need? Is there special things that we're going to have to find that we're not going to find at Publix or Kroger or Fred Meyer's?
Well, I was hoping that I could find some of these items here, but it looks like I'm going to have to order off of Amazon to get rennet.
What is rennet?
It is an enzyme that takes the fats in the milk and turns them into cheese.
Okay. Okay. So, and is this something that is in a liquid form or a tablet form? Or
it can come in either. You can get it in a liquid form. You can get it in a tablet form and turn those tablets into a liquid form.
Okay. And is this, I mean, most of our listeners are very price conscious. So is this going to be an expensive undertaking or?
Not usually, depending on where you buy it. But okay. Off of Amazon, it's maybe $5.
Okay, so I've got some rennet. I've got a gallon of milk from Walmart, and all I have to do is mix this stuff together and cook it?
No. Citric acid.
Citric acid.
And you begin with citric acid and water, and you measure that out. You can get recipes for cheese online. There's a lot of different websites where it's available.
Do you have a favorite recipe?
I do.
Would you mind if we took it and posted it on our webpage for this week?
I would.
You would mind? Okay, yeah. It's family secrets. All right.
Yes, it is, actually.
Okay. So we've got citric acid and water, and we're bringing that to a boil.
You don't bring it to a boil. You just melt it down and add the milk to it, and then you bring that up to around 90 degrees. You add in the rennet. You allow it to sit covered for about 5 minutes, and what you come back to is kind of like a tofu-like substance.
Okay.
So then we're going to get into the joke. Then you get to cut the cheese. You have to cut it in like a checkerboard pattern and pull it out and drain it. So you want to drain all the whey off of it. The whey is what's left behind, of course.
Is there any use for the whey besides draining it off and disposing of it?
A lot of people use it to make other types of cheese because there's still protein left in there. So you can use it for ricotta or cottage cheese.
Yeah, I love ricotta cheese. That's one of my favorites. I always use ricotta when I make lasagna. So that's heavy. That has a lot of the whey in it.
Yeah, it does.
Okay.
And you can also use it for like whey protein for energy drinks, shakes, and stuff.
I wonder if you could dry it? Because I've seen like different powders, like whey powder. Yeah. You know, a lot of the bodybuilders will, you know, want the protein or whatever.
It's dehydrated whey.
Yeah.
But I'm not about to try that.
Yeah. Huh, Doug, that's up to you.
Yeah, that's an interesting idea. And so when making mozzarella, you actually have byproducts to make ricotta as well.
And cottage cheese.
Okay, mm-hmm. So these things, I mean, that's interesting to me because many of the dishes that call for mozzarella also mm-hmm. call for ricotta, and they're sister byproducts mm-hmm. of each other.
Yep.
So, I mean, that especially when we're talking about how we're going to make it after a disaster, not a three-day disaster, not a hurricane or a tornado, but if we're talking about long-term, how are we going to get back to basics? How are we going to do what we need to do when there are no grocery stores anymore? The idea that you don't have to live out of a cardboard box, that you can actually make fresh food and survive on real food again, is very intriguing to me.
And, you know, like the whole Little Miss Muffet, I just got to put it out there. I just keep hearing in my head, Little Miss Muffet, you know, she's eating her curds and whey. I just had to throw that out there.
And
so there you go.
That's what we're talking about. When you say that we're going to slice up this cheese in a checkerboard pattern, those are curds, and then the liquid is the whey. And why would anybody eat that?
You'd have to ask the spider, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so what do we do after we cut up the checkerboard pattern?
You take the chunks of cheese, the curds, mm-hmm. and you put them in a colander and you drain them. Because the purpose of the next steps is to remove all the whey. You want as much of the whey gone as possible. So a lot of people use cheesecloth. I like to use a colander and a microwave because if you nuke it for like 30 seconds, put it back in the colander, squeeze it again, and keep doing this squeezing process until all the whey is gone. It literally causes the whey to seep out of the curds.
So how would you do it if you did it with a cheesecloth? Like, let's say there's no microwaves. If you used a cheesecloth,
take the curds, wrap them in cheesecloth, tie it, and squeeze.
So same squeezing method.
Yeah.
Okay. I gotcha. Yeah.
Like wringing out a wet T-shirt where you go and pull and then all the water comes out. Yes. You would wrap it tight and then pull on the cloth.
It's more like a ball, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's more like squeezing it to drain it. Kind of like wringing out a wash rag for a kid to wash their face with. Yeah. So then the process gets to be a little bit more fun. You get to undo the cheesecloth and stretch it. It's kind of like stretching taffy.
Hmm.
So you literally pull the cheese.
Oh.
This is the reason when you go to the grocery store and you buy string cheese, it's mozzarella cheese, of course, but you can peel it mm-hmm. apart and it comes out in strings. That's yeah. because it's stretched as it's being made. So it literally stretched mm-hmm. out. And yeah. it's kind of fun to do this.
So when you're stretching it, you're realigning the protein molecules to be in long chains, kind of like the same idea of kneading bread dough to create gluten chains to make the bread have a different texture and taste.
Right.
Okay. So this is something that the whole family can be involved in.
Yes. And it's a very fun project to do with children.
Sounds messy.
It's not really that bad.
No?
No. It's not really that bad.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that are worse.
Yes.
Sugar cookies are worse, as a matter of fact.
Oh, yes, true. Good point. Anything with honey, stickiness, ugh.
Yeah.
Well, we made, at my house, we made gingerbread cookies this last week, Amy, with
what?
The... Yeah. We went We went down the road of the Ninja Bread men once again.
Wow.
John was excited.
Nice.
And so, yeah, that dough has honey in it, so it was very sticky and was everywhere.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, gingerbread men in July, I think it's awesome.
Well, it was a little, it was like Christmas in June. It was really just a fun thing to do. And I love gingerbread cookies.
Gingerbread is good all year round.
Yeah.
I mean, it shouldn't be just a holiday thing.
Yeah,
I agree.
Know.
Yeah, we can bring it back.
You know, it's like a tradition thing you're doing with your kids. I mean, you know, that's awesome.
Well, you know, for me, it came up with a request at Walmart for gingerbread men.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you know, we can do this at home, kids, and it'll be better. And
that's
lo and
right.
behold, instead of buying, you know, a $5 little tray of gingerbread cookies, I went and bought a little thing of frosting, and off we went to, and I could have made the frosting at home, I suppose, but we, just a little thing of frosting with a tip on it so mm-hmm. that they could decorate the men. And we went home, and I had almost all the ingredients right there that instant, and we made the gingerbread cookies up, and they were making big goop balls with the frosting everywhere. Liz put three layers of frosting on hers.
Nice.
It was really nice. Quite exciting.
Yes.
So anyway, back to our cheese and our special guest. So you've got the kids working, pulling on the cheese and stretching it so you get the protein strands in the right orientation so that it'll be nice and stringy and be good for your pizza. What's next?
And then you just destroy everything you did and you ball it back up.
Oh!
Because the next process is a little bit more fun, a little bit more messy, but not too bad.
Mm-hmm.
You brine it.
Okay.
On the outside.
Now, I know about brining because I have brined turkeys.
Yes, you have, I'm sure. Yes. A lot of people do.
Yes. Yeah, my husband, I've got a funny, well, I'll tell you about that later, but yeah, my husband's first attempt at brining a turkey did not turn out so well. Yeah, no. It was, I think, kind of room temperature out in the heat. He left it outside for like a day or two.
Oh, no.
And it rotted.
It did. Oh, yes, it did. That was disgusting.
Well, you know,
there's a right and a wrong way to do this.
Yes. The right way involves a cooler.
Yeah. Oh, it was in a cooler. Okay. But it was outside and it wasn't iced. And yes. Yeah.
You need a Yeti.
Nice and warm.
Yeti cooler so it can stand up to those Georgia heats.
I know. Those Yetis are awesome.
Yeah.
A little pricey, but pretty cool.
Well, you know, and as most things in life, you get what you pay for. And I would rather pay a little extra to have a cooler that I can count on than one I can't.
Well, just a quick little bunny trail. I mean, just with those Yetis, I've noticed that the walls on them are so thick. So you look, it looks like you've got this great big huge cooler, but and you open it up, and it's this teeny tiny little space.
Well, the reason behind that is because it's got so much insulation there to keep it cold. And it's actually, I believe most of their models are bear rated. So that you can actually use them as a bear container, because they were very popular up in Alaska. I remember the Fifth Avenue Outfitters up there was pushing them as bear containers.
Didn't seem like you would even need a cooler in Alaska. You just put your food outside and be good to go. I guess the animals would be a problem.
Well, it's not refrigerated up there in the summer.
Not year-round?
Oh, no. Okay. It gets pretty hot up there in the summertime, especially in Fairbanks. Hmm. Fairbanks, you'll hit in top 100 degrees, and then in winter it'll be 60 below. In fact, this is something that most people don't know, but Sherwin-Williams, your favorite paint supplier, has a mountain that they own outside of Fairbanks. And the entire mountain is covered in 2x2 squares of paint splotches.
What?
And they leave them out exposed to the elements for a year and then come back and check it periodically to see how the paint holds up to extreme conditions. Because it'll be 100 degrees in the summer, it'll be 60 to 70 below in the winter with all the variation in between and the heavy rains, and so they can tell how the paint will weather.
That is brilliant. Mm-hmm. I had no idea.
So you can be flying out over in this pristine wilderness, and suddenly there is this disco
very
ball
mountain.
Of mountain there, and everyone's like, yeah, that's the Sherwin-Williams mountain.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, I tell you what, let's stay put. Let's run out to a quick commercial break. You and I kind of go off on these little bunny trails, but we're going to hone ourselves back in. We're going to talk about this cheese making process. I still have more questions, so you guys stay put. We'll be right back in just a few minutes. You're listening to News Talk 1160, The Talk of the Town.
And now, back to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy.
Welcome back, everybody. We're discussing cheese today with our special guest. So, Jessica, you said that the next phase in the cheese making of mozzarella is brining. What's involved in brining?
Just basically soaking it in salt water, very strong salt water, for about 20, 25 minutes.
Okay, so the whole process at this point, you're looking at probably about 45 minutes from start to finish.
From start to finish.
You need either a colander and cheesecloth or cheesecloth. You need some citric acid. You're going to have some water. You need milk. Now, let me ask you about the milk. Is there anything particular about the milk that it has to be?
I prefer to use raw milk, but you do not have to. You just need to use whole milk.
Okay. So any, pasteurized, homogenized whole milk is fine. Raw milk is fine. Whatever milk you can find, as long as it has not had the fat removed, you should be good to go.
Yes. The raw milk seems to do better, like a better flavor for the cheese.
Okay.
But the whole milk does work.
So where do you find raw milk?
It's very hard in some states. A lot of states have laws against the selling of raw milk.
Yeah,
it's actually illegal for human consumption in Georgia, I believe.
Mm-hmm. 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 That's true.
But you can buy it for your pets.
Yeah, there you go.
Yep, you got to take care of your pets, even in an emergency. I mean, I make sure that I have fish antibiotics for my fish, and I'm going to make sure that I have pet milk for my cats so that no matter what happens, that everybody in the family is taken
care of. No matter what happens.
That's right.
There you go.
So, you brine your mozzarella, and then what do you do after that?
You can eat it. It's good. It's
ready
done.
To go.
Yeah. This is an immediate gratification type cheese where you can eat it immediately when it's done. I mean, some of the cheeses have to age. The mozzarella does not. It's a very high moisture mozzarella, which means it's great for pizza. It melts down really well. I absolutely love the homemade mozzarella. Mm.
Yum. So this isn't the type of cheese that you would dip in red wax and put on the shelf for 10 years.
No.
So this is more for a method of using up milk that you are producing. This would be an ideal thing for somebody who had a cow and a family of, like, say, 3 to 6 people. because you're going to have so many more gallons of milk in a week than you could ever drink. So this would be something that you could use up the milk, excess milk for, and put it into a meal.
Well, what about goats? Because to be honest with you, Doug, I'm a little bit more interested in having goats than a cow. Because like with a cow, it really takes a lot of, isn't it like 1.5 acre or something per cow or something? I don't know.
It depends on the cow too. I mean, little Jersey cows are much smaller. They can do fairly well on a small plot. But yeah, I think that you need about 1 acre of grazing land per animal.
Because I know what, like with goats, you don't need near as much space, and they'll pretty much eat all of your scraps. And so can you make goat mozzarella cheese? Because I mean, I've had goat
recipes for goat cheese online. And the process is very similar.
Okay. Yeah, I love, I mean, just got like the goat cheese that's sort of like crumbly. It's one of my favorites.
I kind of figured this would be a bad idea.
Wow. Wow. There it is.
That was a bad joke.
Yeah. Kinda.
So you said you can find goat cheese recipes online?
Yeah, there's recipes for anything you could ever dream of online, but a lot of cheese recipes.
And I always advocate people to actually go get a good hardbound book on things like this. If you think that you might ever need it in an emergency, online may not be there.
That's exactly why I print a lot of my online recipes and put them in a book. And the best thing I have found to do that with is a scrapbook. You can scrapbook all these recipes you print out and have them at your fingertips whenever
good
you need
idea.
Them.
Yeah, pictures with the kids making cheese.
Yep.
My grandmother kept a card catalog, a file catalog with 3x5 cards with all of her recipes in it. And I still use her recipe for my bread.
Nice. That's awesome. Jessica, have you ever made any other types of cheese, like a nice, thick, sharp cheddar or anything like that?
No, it's aging processes, aging? And I just don't have the patience.
With that kind
to
of
wait.
Aging, does it have to age, like in a refrigerated, area?
No, with the wax on it, no.
Okay.
No, you just let it age.
Yeah. You'd want to have
dark, like cool spot.
A cellar.
Yeah. Because I'm just wondering, you know, my whole thought process is what can I make without refrigeration or without, you know, the microwaves and the, you know, all the, you know, the fancy stuff we have now.
You don't have to have the microwave to drain the whey.
Right.
You can use cheesecloth to do all that. It's just a
convenience
and a speed up the process type deal.
I mean, I love the idea of non-refrigeration because, I mean, I've seen, you know, confession, I do watch Doomsday Preppers. I have. They've got some good ideas on there. I mean, they make these people out to be, you know, like complete lunatics. But let me tell you, they've got some good ideas.
That's a little bit like saying you watch NASCAR to see the new car designs, Amy. I mean, come on now.
I watch NASCAR to see the accidents.
That's why everyone watches Doomsday Preppers, to see the accidents. Like the gentleman who shot his own finger off teaching gun safety.
Right. Well, you know, there is an element of...
It's like watching Honey Boo Boo because she's cute, okay?
Yes, point well taken. So, okay, regardless, so I'm watching this episode, and this lady was taking cheese that she bought at the grocery store, and, you know, straight from the, you know, refrigerated section, and she's dipping it in wax. Mm-hmm. And she dips it in wax and sets it on the table and says, there you go, it's good, it's preserved, and you can store it.
I kept a round of cheddar cheese that I got in Wisconsin dipped in red wax in my refrigerator for 13 years.
Holy cow.
And it was still fine. I cracked it open finally one day and went to it, and it was delicious.
That's I'm amazing. Not sure if you could dip mozzarella or not. You know, that's something I'm going to have to look into.
Yeah.
You probably could.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen mozzarella dipped in wax before.
I can't recall it a time like that I've ever seen it. It's always wrapped, vacuum sealed.
Yeah. So, but Doug, you said you had yours in the refrigerator for that long. Yeah. I wonder
well,
if it would
being,
stay.
Being in Georgia, I didn't have a cool, dry place where I could keep it, you know, constantly out. So I just put it in the back of the fridge and forgot about it.
I need to look into how, I mean, because I know pretty much any time you store food, you want it cool, dry, and dark.
Yep.
So, I mean, I'm thinking root cellar, but they're not really dry.
Red wax takes care of the dry and dark part of it. So then all you're really worried about is cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a good point. I wonder, I really do need to do some research and see how long it would last.
Yeah. Another thought is the wax acts as a non-permeable barrier for all of the air and the moisture. Mm-hmm. Could you do this with Mylar?
I don't know. That would be so strange.
It's the same idea. I mean, I know that True Prep sells canned cheese. They have canned cheese from Australia
which is okay. I've tried it.
I've tried it too. Yeah. I was actually really impressed.
Did you like it?
I did.
I just don't care for processed cheese a whole lot. I mean, to me, it tasted almost like a thick... it was a cross between, you know, like the little slices that you put on your sandwiches.
Mm-hmm.
I think it had sort of that flavor, but sort of like a denser you know, round.
I agree. It was very much a cracker cheese, but it was, I thought it was fantastic. And I could easily see making a bechamel sauce out of that for macaroni and cheese or something else.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, they also have butter, which is fabulous. Canned butter. It's fabulous. I love it.
And it's really need good. Butter. I mean, that's one of the essentials of all cooking is to have butter or some sort of a fat to use for in your cooking. So whether you're storing olive oil or peanut oil or butter, you need to have
a long-term storage with those types of oils. Something else I want to learn is how to kind of render fat from, you know, like hogs and stuff.
So. Yes, that would be a very useful skill.
Jessica, have you ever done that before?
Yeah, I actually also make soap.
Oh, do you really?
I do.
Yay.
So, yeah, rendering fat's very easy.
You know, I have a soap book and I've got a bunch of the stuff. I just haven't done it yet. I'm so bad.
If you ever want help, just let me know.
I will.
Well, there we go. I mean, this is a really good point, is that, you know, the people who are into homesteading are multifaceted. Mm-hmm. These are people who see, you know, opportunities to learn how to do things, opportunities to be able to make more at home, be less dependent on other people, to be able to have quality control and be responsible for your own quality. And I'd like to reload my own ammunition from that perspective. Everyone says, well, you know, you should carry factory ammunition because the ammunition, you can be guaranteed of its quality. I've seen more problems with factory ammunition than I ever have with my own. And I feel the same way about everything I do. I would rather, you know, do it myself and know how it's done and know what goes into it than not know. And to make your own cheese, to make your own soap, to make your own clothes, to make your own life. That's really what we're here talking about.
We're kind of going back to the way things, you know, used to be. Mm-hmm. And because we're kind of finding that since we're pulling away from that and, you know, like I was telling Jessica, I was like, this is kind of lost art. And she goes, no, it's not so lost. She's like, I know how to do it. There are some people who do know how to do this, but they're few and far between. And there are so many people out there that listen and they're so interested, you know, and I'm quite guilty because I love the idea of this. And, you know, I'll sit there and I'll, you know, at work and I'll, you know, look it up online. I'm like, oh, I could do that. And then I'll buy the book and then and then I get home and life takes over. And, you know, my children have to be at different places and the house needs to be cleaned and dishes done and food cooked and where's the stinking time? So I'm quite guilty. I mean, I know that I have to set some time aside, maybe on the weekends, take a Saturday or something, and say, you know what, this is going to be my brand new homesteading day. Well, I'm going to learn.
What encouraged me most about today's discussion is that it doesn't take a whole day.
Right,
to make,
exactly.
To make this cheese,
that's what it sounds like.
Less than an hour's total time to be able to actually use it. And then you turn around and you make something for your kids. I mean, what kid doesn't like mozzarella cheese? And you make a French bread pizza, or you make, you know, a lasagna. Or something else with it that they help make, and then they eat it, and they see that it comes from, you know, from hearth to home. It is a beautiful prospect to be able to take care of yourself and involve your family and make things. I mean, this is a Jeffersonian ideal that I have been pushing for so long.
Yes.
That you take a responsibility, that you touch the earth again, and you realize where you came from. This is what's important in life.
Yeah, it is. And yeah, you're exactly right. And it is important, and it's important to take time. Well, anything that's important to you. I mean, if you truly believe... and adopt the idea that it really is truly important, then you would make time for it. And I'm going to smack myself on the wrist, and I'm going to get to it. So there you go.
Well, if it's any consolation, the soap making process really doesn't take that long either. If you hot process the soap, you're looking like an hour and a half.
Well, you're killing me, Jessica.
Hour and a half to make soap. And here I was taking all those little soap slivers and just mashing them together into a new
bar. That's one
way
to do it. There you go. That's one way to do it.
It had a lot of advantages. Don't look at me like that. I mean, guys, seriously,
it was conserving
and saving, and they smelled a little funny, but it was okay. Seriously. Okay, folks, we're coming up on another commercial break. We'll be right back to discuss True Prep's product of the week, the huge True Prep sale for the next 2 months that is going on, and wrap up our discussion with Jessica about soap and cheese, but not making both at the same time in the same vessel. You're listening to Ready Radio. We'll be right back.
And now, back to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy.
Everyone, we're back in studio. I have an extra special guest. My grandmother has stopped in to see the last few minutes of our show today. And during the commercial break, she was talking to Jessica about the Amish and the way that she grew up. And I invited her into the studio to just talk a little bit about homesteading the way it used to be. And Graham, welcome to the show. And why don't you tell us a little bit about what you were saying about the Amish and canning and the way you used to live?
Well, about the Amish, they're my brothers and sisters. Matter of fact, that's the way I was raised. That was our, we had everything homemade. If it wasn't homemade, we didn't have it. Whether it was bread, clothes, milk out of the barn, butter, we did it with ourselves. I mean, we made it. We didn't go to, one time Ma said, Pa would go to the store for maybe some pork and beans or something like that. I mean, even that was a treat. She'd say, well, I'd like to have a little ketchup. And he would say, do you really need that? And then she'd say, well, we weren't rich, you know. So she said, no, I guess I really don't need it. But she didn't make ketchup. So ketchup was a treat when we did again, which was very, very seldom. And everything else she made. She sewed, and she mended socks at night in front of the wood stove. The stove would be going lickety-split with wood, and she'd sit there and mend my dad's socks. And we got mended clothes, and we went to school with mended clothes, and everybody was the same. And that's the way the Amish live today.
You were saying that you think that, I think you said kids these days, but people today just don't have that kind of an ethic anymore, that they want to go to Walmart and just pick up things.
That's right. Easy way out.
How do you think that people's mentality has changed from when you were a kid till now?
Tremendously.
Well, in what ways?
Well, first place, they don't believe in God the way they should. They should put Christ first. And then he will take care of them. They are not brought up that way anymore.
You mean that they don't see value in doing it for themselves?
They don't see people going out chopping wood to keep the stove going, to bake the bread that's supposed to be in the kitchen stove. They weren't brought up. They don't know what you're talking about. They're lost. This is a different generation, and we're just going to have, I don't know what we're going to do, but I see the end coming pretty soon, and then it'll be over. But I feel sorry for the little kids, because they got too much, and they don't appreciate what they do have. They just take it for granted.
Well, folks, I appreciate that very much. And I think that that's really why we are here, why True Prep is here, why there's this huge community that's coming together to try to come back to traditional family values, that is trying to touch on traditional ways of doing things, not only for health, but also for safety, that we can be in charge of our environment. And yeah, when you look around today, things are disheartening. I mean, you see people who are running up massive credit card debt, who would rather buy clothes than wash clothes. You're seeing people who look around at the world as give me. It's becoming a brave new world that Aldous Huxley envisioned, 100 years ago. And this is the exact wrong path to take. We have got to take a stand. We have got to make motion to get back to values where hard work and honesty are valued, where people have faith, where people have convictions, where people do what they say they're going to do and stand by the truth and stand by doing right by everybody. And to get there, we are going to have to start working as a society and as a country. We're going to have to really be willing to invest in work and not say, what can other people do for me, or what is the easy way out, but how can I do the best for everybody, and how can I work hard? And this is a change that has to be made from the inside out. And I see this in the people who work at True Prep. I see this in the people who sponsor this show and who work and who call in and who send us requests and who send us information on things that they'd like to hear about, like cheese making. We had a request this last week of somebody who said, I'm interested in cheese making. Can you do a show on that? And we jumped on it and found someone who could come in, a good friend of mine who can come in and talk about cheese making and bring us, this topic. But in a broader sense, all of these topics, everything we've done for the last almost year that we've been doing this has been to get people excited about doing for themselves and being self-sufficient and touching on Jefferson's principles.
See, we live in a society today that's consumers, and we need to all become producers. You can't survive as a consumer.
Yeah,
consumers
point,
use
yeah.
everything around you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. And, you know, I think a lot of it, too, is just kind of honing in on our busy schedules. And, and you know, and also, I mean, I'm very guilty of, you know, kind of after a busy day, just kind of plopping in front of the TV. I mean, there's no telling how much, you know, how many hours I've just wasted, you know, kind of relaxing, but just kind of being, I think I could probably relax making soap.
Well, you know, that was something that I would do is when I would do my reloading, I would do it during my downtime, and I found it relaxing. Mm-hmm. And there are things that you can do to relax that don't involve checking out. And I think
right.
that the
That's
television
That's a good point.
Is the ultimate checkout
it
factor.
Is.
It puts everybody on autopilot. And mm-hmm. instead of creating or doing or building or having something more to their lives, they have less. And this a downward spiral, and that spills into other aspects of their lives. It spills into their work. It spills into their relationships. It spills into every aspect of them that they can be on autopilot. There's a song that was very popular just a couple weeks ago by Miranda Lambert talking about how everything has become automatic. Mm-hmm. And that has that really touched on my heart, because I think that we have become an automatic society. That we don't work hard, we don't do things anymore. We just let it kind of flow to us. We're like a piece of jetsam circling the bowl going down the drain. And that's not a way to live. That's not a way to create a country. That's not a way to raise a generation. We have to do more.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of laugh at the shows with the zombies, and you know, I mean, in a way, we kind of are turning into zombies, really.
Well, that was George Romero's criticism. The Dawn of the Dead was consumerism run rampant, and the remake didn't capture that anymore, but the original sure did. That this is what they did in life, was just go walk around the mall. So now in death, they do it too. I mean, it really
nice.
Was a poignant expose on consumer culture. And I'm not anti-capitalist. I believe in capitalism, but I am anti-consumerism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my little tiny house might fit in pretty well right here.
To a degree.
You could put it in my garage, Amy.
Poke. Right.
Let's talk a little bit about True Prep's product of the week and their massive sale that they're having for the next couple
yes.
months. I was talking to one of the owners yesterday. You know, he was kind enough to stop in and speak with me and give me a little bit of insight on what they're doing over there for the show. And lo and behold, they are working on a massive sale. We mentioned it last week that it was coming up. Well, this is the mother of all sales that you're going to be seeing at True Prep over the next month. They have special dispensation from many of their suppliers to be able to sell below the advertised prices, so that you will not see a lower price advertised anywhere in the country compared to what they will be doing. I don't have the exact details on the numbers, but I know that it is going to be a massive sale. There's going to be items that are sold at cost. There's going to be a new buying club program. There's going to be all of these opportunities to save money, and a dollar saved at True Prep will be another dollar you can spend to increase your supplies to make you ready for whatever comes next. And on top of this, they have a wide variety of stuff that you could use that we talked about today. True Prep is one of the only places you can find powdered citric acid to use to make your mozzarella. I know that they carry Ball citric acid and American Spice Company citric acid. Also, I've picked up a cheesecloth there myself. So that's another product that you can get at True Prep that you can use for making the topic of today's discussion.
Yep, so that in turn would be our
product of the week.
There we go. There you have it. Okay. Good deal. So we have, you know, we talked a lot about homesteading, you know, homesteading topics today, you know, not so much the doom and gloom, but more kind of the opposite side. And, you know, as well as, and let me ask you, Jessica, I know this is kind of going a little bit further, you know, out of from the cheese making. You said you've done soaps. What about, do you grow like herbs, or do you have any little gardens or have chickens or anything?
I do not this year. I've gone through some life changes recently,
mm-hmm.
but typically I have a pretty decent sized garden. I do some canning and grow some herbs and grow some flowers.
Yeah.
Because
I was thinking, you know, nice little basil plant with that mozzarella and some fresh tomato. I mean,
and balsamic vinegar.
Oh my gosh.
There
Forget
we go.
About it.
Oh, yeah.
Forget about it. I mean, heck, I mean, you know how much you pay, and I mean, you go to, you know, Midtown or you know, your hoity-toity restaurants, how much are you paying for a meal just with that?
Just take that out completely. Don't even think about the cost. Think about all of the preservatives,
mm-hmm.
chemicals, antibiotics, hormones that are added into all of our food today. And do you really want to be feeding all of that to your family?
Right.
I mean, some of these things increase the cancer rates and
mm-hmm.
make the growth of cancer cells accelerate. I'm not sure that that's something I want to be feeding my family, and that's the reason I started doing all this to begin with, because the truth of the matter is the homesteading and the prepping, it's for the safety and health and well-being of your family.
Yeah, absolutely. And well, it's definitely been, I mean, there's so many more health benefits and instead of just monetary, so...
It's a tremendous thing. Folks, we appreciate you listening. Next week, we'll have another exciting topic, maybe something a little more doom and gloom to make Amy happy. But you've been listening to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy. Check us out on Facebook, Twitter, and our website, www.readyradio.net. Send us an email at info@readyradio.net and listen to us on this station next week at the same time.
You've been listening to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy. It's emergency preparedness for everyone. Brought to you by TruPrep. For all your prepping needs, visit TruPrep online at truprep.com or visit a TruPrep store in Roswell or Marietta. Tune in each week as Doug and Amy get you ready for anything that comes your way. Ready Radio, Saturday evenings at 5, only on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.